As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide makes simplicity a priority so financial professionals can help their clients achieve their retirement goals. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
From Silicon Valley to Wall Street, the promise and perils of artificial intelligence are playing out on the world stage. But what will the next phase of AI adoption look like? Which companies, from big tech to startups, will dominate? And where do the risks and unintended consequences lie? I'm Emily Chang. Join me at Bloomberg Tech in San Francisco, May 9th, to answer many of the industry's burning questions, alongside Snap's Evan Spiegel, Xbox President Sarah Bond, OpenAI's Brad Lightcap, top researcher Dr. Fei-Fei Li of Stanford, and many more. More details and just a few tickets left at Bloomberg.com/TechSF.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Paul Sweeney. Join us each day for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App. I'm not going to do a long introduction here because every second counts right now with what we're seeing in American banking. Christopher Whalen owns the high ground on this. His institutional risk newsletter is a required read in American banking. He's been dead on about some of the shadows out there within the American financial system. Chris, I'm just going to cut to the chase. Is there a next NYCB? We had SVB. Now we've got the follies here where the former Secretary of Treasury wades in to save the day. Do you just assume there's another one out there?
Yes. And the reason I say that, Tom, is that the changes that have occurred in the usage of certain types of real estate, commercial buildings, multifamily buildings, and then politics, rent control legislation in New York was a fiasco. And now, one of the last great progressives in Washington, Marty Gruenberg, has decided to stick the U.S. banking industry with the cost. I don't think he intends to ever sell the joint ventures that control the rent-stabilized assets from Signature Bank.
My amateur take on this, including reading your definitive one volume on American finance, is that these are marketing concepts at SVB, at NYCB, at all. They're like marketing plans with growthiness in them that go amok. Is that accurate?
It is, Tom, and I also think it was a function of the time. In other words, you had muted credit costs. You had heavily managed markets, care of the FOMC. So bankers had an easy time, and certain business models actually grew, like First Republic. I mean, my God, I think the only way they made money was selling loans. The rest of the business model didn't, you know, particularly work. And they were a client of JP Morgan in the mortgage space. So I think you're dead on. There were a lot of models that grew over the last 10 years, really since 2008, that don't work now. And particularly the change in the valuation of urban commercial and urban multifamily real estate is episodic. You know, I raided many of the banks in New York, Tom, when I was Vic Kroll. These portfolios hadn't seen any appreciable credit loss in 75, 100 years. And they were always fully let. These buildings today we're talking about are fully let. They cash flow, but you can't sell them. The value's been cut in half.
And Paul, I see this every single transaction I review as an amateur. Many of these busted properties are like 92, 97, 98% rented.
Chris, how does the average investor identify maybe where the next landmine can be? I guess a lot of people are concerned about commercial real estate. Nobody had on their bingo card rent-controlled apartments in New York City.
No, and I don't think we fully, including myself, understood how prevalent this problem was. You know, when New York Community Bank bought Signature, they said, no, we don't want the rent-stabilized stuff. You keep that. And the FDIC did. But we didn't realize they also had that. They've since fessed up, and they're probably going to drop a significant restatement when they finally file for the end of the year. And I think a lot of investors are quite angry because they feel like they were not told the truth. But let's be fair. All of these New York City banks haven't had to worry about credit in 50 plus years. That's why they allowed Joe Ficalora at New York Community Bank to run that bank with a lot of hot money, broker deposits, right? He had no credit losses. So it worked. It doesn't work now. I think that $1 billion from Steve Mnuchin is not enough. I think they should create a bad bank.
Yeah, Chris, help us
you
there.
You need 10. We need 10, Tom.
Yeah, wow, well, okay. Just, you know, we don't want numbers on a Thursday. But, you know, I looked at, what was it, $1 billion? I said, that's like chump change. I mean,
in this context, yes. You have a $40 billion, more or less, multifamily book. What's a reasonable haircut on that, Tom?
Yeah.
Okay. 25 cents to start.
Yeah.
And we work back from that. But they have time. Remember, again, these are cash flowing assets that are now impaired because of political actions in New York. So we have time. It's not like people don't want to live there. But over time, the value of these assets is going to deteriorate. And that's why I said I don't think FDIC Chairman Groomberg has any intention of selling those properties. He'll leave that for the Republicans.
Okay. Paul?
So, Chris, if we step back, is there reason to believe that there are systemic risk in the regional banking system in this country? Or again, is it just kind of these one-off situations?
It's chopped salad. The only way you could do the work is to go pull all the loan-level data from TREP, which is very expensive, and do the work on who owns the mortgage and who bought the participation in the mortgage. There's a lot of risk that's been spread out through participations. And I would remind you that the FDIC has the power to repudiate participations in the context of the receivership. I've worked for several receivers myself, and that's the first thing they ask you when they hire. So I would tell you yes, right, Paul. The answer to your question is, but it's institution by institution. And again, they have time. Banks have the ability to slow walk this stuff for years if they have liquidity. Okay, if they can finance the asset. But they may end up as the owner. We may wipe out that 50 cents of equity, quote unquote, on top, right? And the bank ends up owning the property at 50 cents on the dollar. Now the question is, can they work with
that's it? My last question. And I think it's really important, Chris. I mean, with great respect for people that are taking a lot of losses on this. And thank you so much for on YouTube live chat saying, hey, Tom, wasn't NYCB a sponsor of yours? Full disclosure, folks, a long time ago, NYCB was really supportive of our conversation. Chris Whalen, is a general statement in your world, rates have moved, there's going to be a loss, but the moment the loss is taken and new money comes in, it's a whole new world after all. Is it going to be morning in America for banking in what, Paul, 2 years?
Yeah.
Something like that. Is that where we're at?
Only if we see short-term rates fall a bit. We need to get Fed funds down into the kind of mid to low fours. I'm not sure the long end is going to follow in a traditional sense. I think it's different this time. And the Treasury's financing costs, which they've got to put on the long end. They can't just do T-bills anymore, Tom.
Okay.
That's going to be the story. Oh, by the way, we're reissuing inflated. I have a lot of work to do.
Oh, very. You're reissuing the book.
Yeah, and I'm going to do a heavy edit. I didn't have time in 2010 to edit that book the way it needed it.
Very cool. That's the best news today. This has been a joy. Chris Whalen, thank you so much. Greatly, greatly appreciate it. On short notice this morning here on the NYCB challenges, look to Bloomberg Finance at Bloomberg News to give you perspective on our banking system. His book, Inflated, Anticipated.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Only one person on the planet actually has studied George Washington's regular annual message of January 8, 1790, and that, of course, is Wendy Schiller up at Brown University, who drives us forward into 2024. Does the president go after President Trump tonight, Professor Schiller?
Good morning, Tom. Good morning, Paul. He has to go after President Trump, but he has to do it in a way that says that defining what America is, what democracy is, what the presidency should be. That's what he's got to do. We can't go super personal. That's inappropriate for the State of the Union. He has to present a vision of what his presidency will be, and then during the campaign, reinforce what the vision is of what the Trump presidency will be. And his opportunity tonight is to do that unfiltered. And it's the last opportunity he'll have before November to do that without any filter.
If you were writing, they came to Wendy Schiller and they said, Professor, can you give us, this is how stupid this is, Paul. Professor Schiller, could you try to give us two sentences for the president's speech? What would those sentences be?
What do you want America to be? What do you want this country to stand for? And are you willing to work together to make it happen? That's what he's got to do. He's got to channel FDR. He's got to channel, obviously JFK. That's hard to do, John F. Kennedy. But he's got to channel even Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. The spirit has to be, do you want what we view to be the ugliness right now? Or do you want to turn the page and, you know, rebuild what we have as a country? And that's something he's got to set as a lofty goal and basically say, I'm the guy to do it. And the other guy's not the guy to do it.
Wendy, Tom and I and all the other folks that have the Bloomberg terminal in front of them, we see the economic data, and the economic data in this country is pretty darn good, but that message is not resonating with the public. What do you think the president and the administration need to do to kind of change the rhetoric to say, you know what, this economy is pretty darn good, and in fact, this administration's been a big part of why it is pretty good?
I think the Biden administration made a pretty significant flaw in their selling of their legislative program, the Inflation Reduction Act, infrastructure. They didn't really tie what they were doing to how it's going to improve people's lives. And this is what Democrats do. They go big, they're successful, they get a lot of big things passed, and then they completely fail to sell them properly. The Republicans cut taxes, raise deficits, and they're the magic party on the economy. This has been true for 40 years. I mean, I don't know if there's a magic answer to this, but I think right now, telling people the economy is better than they think it is not going to work. Showing people how the government has helped them in the face of a bad economy a couple of years ago may work.
You just got a window there, folks, into Professor Schiller in the classroom where she loses it and actually tells you what she thinks. Wendy, do liberals sit in their hands tonight?
You know, I think everybody, whether it's young people that we're dealing with in college campuses or disillusioned people in their 50s or 60s with the Democratic Party, have to understand that this is moving from a referendum, a popularity contest, to an actual choice about what you want to see over the next 4 years. And so liberals who are really panicking have to understand, they have to think about what the realities of a Trump presidency will be for their policy that they want to see passed and what Biden could bring. And so I think that's the problem. And the more discord that is out there in the Democratic Party, the stronger Donald Trump becomes. They've done a great job of containing him.
On.
Oh, come on. He looks pretty good now, right? People forgot what he was like before, and they're like, okay, he'll be better than Biden.
Wendy, go back to Blaine from Maine in Grover Cleveland Alexander in the 1890s. The Democratic Party was a mess. And it's always been a mess all through my youth. And granted, there was the peaceful years of the Clinton, Obama thing and all that. But isn't the Democratic Party supposed to be one big scream fest until, 12 hours before the election?
Well, the problem for the Democrat Party is that the Republicans can do that, and then they all come together in Kumbaya and they vote for their person, and Democrats get mad and stay home. And so that is the big risk for the Biden camp this year. This speech isn't about saving the campaign in one night. This speech is reminding the base of the Democratic Party about the alternatives that will face them in November. That's what this speech is. And if Biden can be energetic, avoid too many gaffes, then maybe he can start to bring people back into the fold.
Wendy, will there be presidential debates this cycle?
Paul, so far, I have thinking to myself, yes, because so far Trump will look more energetic and more vital in a debate vis-a-vis Biden than he would have looked against Nikki Haley or Ron DeSantis. So I think the choice set is different for Trump, but that's always a risk for the camp, right? Does he, you know, show up as good Trump or a bad Trump? And they can't control that on the debate stage.
Wendy, have you ever been in a smoke-filled room? I mean, have you, like, in your study of your iconic textbook and all, have you ever been, like, at a convention and they're all smoking cigars in a room and Professor Schiller's there or student Schiller was there? Have you ever actually done the depths of the process?
I have not done that. The closest I came was working in Democratic, alternative Democratic Party politics in Chicago in the 1980s, which, you know, came close to that kind of environment, but not quite.
Okay.
So real quickly, Wendy, should Tom and I pay attention to the conventions this summer?
Yes, because I think that, you know, remember Donald Trump's speech in 2016?
Right.
He'll do a very similar speech this year, similar issues. Right. Especially crime and the border.
Right.
And that's an Achilles heel for Biden. Right.
Right.
4 years later, 8 years later, things don't seem to be better. That's going to be what the speech is for the Democrats. I still think there's a possibility of change in the ticket. We don't know for sure. But I'm not sure how smoothly that convention goes.
Wendy, I spent time with the Secretary of Commerce this week at the Council on Foreign Relations. How's Governor Raimondo of Rhode Island doing in the Biden administration?
Well, she's keeping her profile relatively policy oriented, which is what she is and what she did as governor of Rhode Island. You know, everybody's starting to look ahead to 28. That's, you know, on the Republican side and the Democratic side. Pete Buttigieg moved to Michigan, for example. Gretchen Whitmer's getting a lot of press. I think she's just going to decide, do my job well, see what happens with the election, and then take it from there. But I don't think she's ruling anything out.
Wendy, hugely valuable. Thank you so much. Professor Schiller at Brown University, certainly one of the best that we have. And I can't say enough about her many, many books that she's written here to inform America of our civics as well. Paul, she gets going. She gets fired up. And it's just great. Whatever your politics, she makes you think. Kara Murphy, you know, she's the usual equity and all that. She worked at a small shop called Goldman Sachs, blah, blah, blah. She taught English and French in the Czech Republic. Joining us now in Prague, Kara Murphy joins us here. What was it like in your youth, Kara? You're still young and beautiful, but at Kestra Investment Management, what was it like getting off the plane in Prague and teaching English and French?
Well, I have to say, I learned how to order a beer really quickly.
There we go.
Took some practice, but I got there. It was a wonderful time. It was right after the wall had fallen.
Ah.
So it was a really kind of undiscovered part of the world. I had a wonderful time. It was great.
I did Bloomberg on the Economy for an entire week in Prague. It was like hugely cool. It was just as Kara says, they were coming out of all the different challenges of the 1980s. Kara, on the market, have you reset? Is it the same old, same old? Is there a new view at Kestra Investment Management?
Well, I think, you know, as we heard in some of your earlier reporting, 2022 and so far 2023 has been all about the Mag 7, right? It's been this really narrow market with a couple of names who are driving the vast majority of returns. And there's good fundamental reasons for that, right? We not only have AI, but it's shown up in these companies' revenues and earnings and margins. So there's real fundamental underpinnings of that. But what that also means is that so much attention and so many dollars have gone to this handful of names. It means that there are all these opportunities that are largely being overlooked elsewhere in the market. And I think that's kind of exciting where, you know, we have places that are undervalued and sort of forgotten that provide really great investing opportunities.
All right, Kara. So I guess one of the potential calls out there is that, hey, if this Fed is going to start cutting interest rates, maybe I can, in fact, find some performance outside of those big cap tech names. Maybe I can go down to mid cap, maybe even small cap. Am I too early to think that, or is that still an option?
So these things are, unfortunately, are very hard to predict. When we'll actually see this shift out of, let's say, mid cap, out of the mega cap into things like mid and small cap. But what's happened is that a lot of portfolios have become, just by letting them drift, have become so heavily weighted towards these mega cap names. Right. You have to be a little bit more active in pulling your portfolio back down in cap. And I like to use small caps as a sort of extreme example of the wide differential and how investors have seen these different parts of the market. But if you look at large caps versus small caps, typically large caps have traded about a 40% premium to small caps. Makes sense. Today, they're trading at 100% of the small cap PE. So, you know, you can even believe that small caps face greater headwinds than large caps, but how much is too much in terms of that valuation differential? So especially, as you mentioned, you know, if the Fed starts cutting interest rates, we have a somewhat easier financial conditions. That's typically a pretty supportive environment for small caps. So you want to make sure that you have exposure there.
Carrick, how about on the fixed income side? As I looked at some of the performance from 2023, I was surprised to see that the best performing fixed income area was high yield, U.S. high yield. And with all the talk of recession, I'm surprised that it did that well. How do you view the fixed income opportunities right here?
Well, I completely agree with you there in that I think the outperformance of high yield is a bit of a head scratcher. You know, I think there are actually a lot of opportunities in fixed income. If you look at pretty much any sub asset class in this space, we're talking about yields that are at the high end of their 10-year range, right? So just by sort of owning and clipping right. those coupons, investors can get really attractive returns. But high yield, you know, spreads are near historic lows. There's very little risk kind of built into those names. And so that's where we would be a bit more cautious.
One final question, Carol. I got to run here to wrap up the show, but it's just simple. Energy, nobody's talking about
no.
it. You know, it's like off
no,
the
we
radar.
We got WTI crude oil at $78.
Yeah, Kara Murphy at $80 a barrel. Is energy on your radar as an equity proposition?
I think energy actually is really interesting. You go back to valuations, the whole sector is trading at half of their 10-year PE. And again, that's not the only thing that you're going to look at. But I think there are some really interesting long-term opportunities. Great example of an area of the market that's just been overlooked.
Kara, thank you so much. Kara Murphy there. Teacher, Prague.
Yeah.
The Czech Republic. A few years ago.
Now down in Austin, Texas.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Good morning, everyone. Tom Keene and Paul Sweeney, and the headlines, the newspaper report, our most popular segment of the day. There's no question about that. Lisa Mateo, please.
All right, so we've been hearing about how the National Guard being deployed into the New York City subways. So the New York Times took this interesting look into how bad the crime is underground. So the crime rates, they jumped during the pandemic starting in 2020, but the subway became a little bit safer last year. But things started to change this year. I mean, you hear Michael Barr report about this all the time, right? According to police data, overall major crimes in the transit system increased 13% so far this year through February 25th. There's also been more assaults against subway employees than last year. And they've tried to do a number of things, right? They increased overtime pay for police officers. They began removing mentally ill homeless people from the system. They install these surveillance cameras. And now this is a step they're getting to. They're deploying hundreds of state troopers, National Guard members into the subway system.
This is a loaded topic.
Sure.
This is, and it's here and there. As I said at home, I said, wow, we deployed the National Guard.
It's not a good look. Well, I'm sure the NYPD is not particularly happy. I ride the subway every single day. I've ridden the subway every day for 45 years. It's better today than when I started. I feel completely safe in the subway. Maybe I'm the other side. I'm just not paying attention, but I don't know. I mean, the subway's always been a dicey thing, but it's the most efficient way to get around town. I don't know.
Mayor Adams articulated how few crimes there are given the millions of riders. And yet, here we are with the tension that we feel in the city.
Yep.
I mean, it's tangible. What do we have now?
It's tough. Sure. We'll head to the Wall Street Journal now. You've heard of people sprinkling ashes at sea, right? That's one trend. But now there's this company, Celestis. It's a Houston-based company. They're dedicated to launching human ashes into space.
Oh, please.
So this is becoming the new thing. It started the first flight actually in 1997. It's sent since then the cremated remains of more than 2,000 clients. They go to Earth orbit, the moon, and most recently they also go to deep space. And it's not cheap, okay? So the cost of this, a lunar deep space flight, it'll cost around $13,000. Flights to the edge of space, between $3,000 and $5,000. Okay, a little bit more affordable. And there's a couple people who've done it. You have Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry and his wife, actually. I did not know
that. Makes sense.
They were sent off to space. Science fiction authors, astronauts, engineers. You have just space fans. And yes, dogs' ashes. They're sending their dog ashes to
pro
space.
Tip. Yeah. There was a point where there were so many gerbils dying on us. There was a tree out back where we had to go and bury the damn gerbils. And the biggest worry was bringing up one as you were burying the 45 odd as well. We called it the gerbil tree.
We have them one in our yard too.
Maybe
actually,
we should
have
just
put
the gerbil in the deep space.
It'll cost you $13,000. There
money
you go.
Which is what the damn gerbil cost to begin with.
All right, I have a new cocktail trend for you, Tom. Okay,
oh,
this is
thank
from the
you.
Journal. Have you had one of these Oleo martinis? Okay, so here's the thing: it's a wet martini with a high vermouth to gin ratio. Here's the real magic. It's called fat washing. Here's what you do. You shake the spirit, right? In this case, it's vermouth.
Why are you looking at me, sweetie?
You shake it with a fat, like olive oil. You put it in the freezer, and then you skim off the fat that hardens on top. So it's like this silky booze. It makes it dangerously drinkable. And you garnish it with a single drop of oil that kind of dances on top as you sip it. So
this is from the Wall Street Journal.
This is the Wall Street Journal has the recipe there in case you're interested.
Pro tip. They have done a fabulous job and they have reopened the Hotel Chelsea. The first time I was in there, if there had been somebody dead in the corridor, I wouldn't have been surprised. And they've really just done a great job opening. And they made the drink you just described,
something like that.
It's worth the trek to do this. It's all super chilled and it costs more money than God and all that. We used to call that a reverse martini.
Yep.
And then the way I would do that is that's a reverse martini with a Colby on top. And the Colby likes lots of, like, what do you call it when you're dirty martini? Lots of olive stuff.
Yep. Hmm.
So that's really, it's like a refined, is it like a refined dirty reverse martini?
And you serve it with fried olives. So that's the new thing.
Oh, you're killing me. We don't go to bars like she goes to.
No, of course not.
You fancy.
Know, I'm like, can I have a Pabst?
Yeah.
Lisa, one more, please.
This is the kicker here. Dwayne The Rock Johnson launching a men's skincare line.
Rich, he's out of control.
I'm telling you, it's called Papa Tui, personal care brand for men. It's launching in Target stores and online on Sunday. It's got everything. It even has products for tattoo care. So when people get tattoos, they don't know what to put on it. My son just got a whole sleeve. There you go. You can put.
Did he come to you for permission for that, or is he too old?
He did that. He's over 21.
He's
so
over 21.
He does his thing.
Okay.
And that's a job.
In hindsight, did you approve or no?
I'm not thrilled with it, but I don't know. He says it gets the ladies.
Okay, there you go.
So what's the tie-in here to The Rock? You got The Rock in here, which is very
Mateo. So but it's his line. So he's launching it. It's affordable. Everything is between like maybe $8 and $10, but you got everything. You got lotion, toner, shampoo, conditioner, body, you know, wash, deodorant. deodorants, everything. So he says men come to him and they ask him actually about not only his workouts, but his skincare.
Yeah,
so men are interested.
You did the same thing when you met The Rock here a couple of months ago. Lisa, I think, thank you.
Yes.
That was quite a newspaper
yes,
report.
Exactly. Fulfilled.
Thank you. Greatly appreciate it. Lisa
place.
Mateo providing a value add here. This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast, bringing you the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.